Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Respected elders, brothers, sisters in Islam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I'm
going to begin this afternoon's proceeding by painting a scenario for you. I want you to imagine that there's a situation in Northern Ireland where there is a bus full of Catholics and Protestants. An extreme group takes over this bus, deciphers the Catholics from the Protestants, and then shoots the Catholics at point blank range, and you end up with over 30 Catholics dead. It's an extreme denomination, neither Catholic nor Protestant. What would the international response be? What would be the response when it comes to the media? Would there not be an international outcry on the government to take action to prevent such things from taking place? Would there not be campaigns to approach the UN to prevent such killings from taking place? If there was just one incident, it would rock the international community, and indeed it would get a huge amount of media coverage. Such scenarios in Pakistan are not scenarios but realities that take place on a regular basis. There is media silence, there is silence when it comes to the international community, there is silence from organizations such as the United Nations. There is silence when it comes to the Muslim community, and when it comes to the Shia Muslim community, there is apathy, there is silence. Indeed, if we as a community do not wake up and take decisive action by at least acknowledging what is happening in Pakistan, Pakistan will become a role model for other states, a role model of how one can oppress and suppress and persecute a community with absolute and utter impunity and with a complete lack of accountability. Indeed, only this morning, a car hit a bus. Individuals going from Quetta to Iran, and 35 people at the moment is the latest count that have been killed. And again, this is a common and everyday occurrence in Pakistan. Therefore, it is most apt that we are discussing this very important topic this evening with a most esteemed scholar. Sayyid Murtada Ali Zaidi is a graduate from the Seminary of Qom. He is a writer, a lecturer, and political analyst. For over 16 years, he has been involved in various tabligh and humanitarian activities across Pakistan. He is a trustee of the Ilm or Amal Trust that has a range of projects, ranging from orphanages to hospitals and to schools. So inshallah, we shall begin his address with Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
صلى على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم صلى على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيد الأنبياء والمرسلين حبيب الله العالمين أبي القاسم محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم وعلى آله الطيبين والطاهرين سيما بقية الله في الأرضين. First of all, I would like to thank Allah Almighty for providing me this opportunity and providing all of us this opportunity to discuss this issue, which is happening with a big number of Muslim community. You can imagine around 170 million people living in Pakistan and going through these events. And I would also like to thank those who organized this gathering and the organizers of the whole event. In my speech, which will last for around 45 minutes, I will try to explain the historical background and the steps which were taken on this historical background which led to this situation in Pakistan. Though it's a big story, but I will try to cut it short, and then we'll come to the analysis of the current situation and then a few results which we can extract from the current situation. Then the more important part will come, and that will be your question and answer, and we will try to explain the points which were left from the address in the question and answer session, inshallah. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad wa ajil farad. You know, the area which we are talking about is Indian subcontinent, and Indian subcontinent is historically influenced by Persia, the Iranian side, and Afghanistan, and in the initial time it was influenced through sea by the Arabs. What were the initial reports of people coming from Arabs? It comes to the very early time of Islam, at the time when Bani Umayyah was following those who were following Ahlul Bayt, and they used to come to subcontinent, Indian subcontinent, to get refuge here. The first Arab army which invaded, particularly for their own reasons, you know the history, it has different reasons to explain, but we can say this might be one of the reasons, because the leader who guided the army and who supported the army, both were very much involved in this event. You can imagine Hajjaj bin Yusuf sent this army, and you know very well how was Hajjaj bin Yusuf and what was his agenda at that time. He sent an army guided by Muhammad bin Qasim, a youngster, and he came to send through the area which is now called Karachi, and he entered through this gate, and they went up to Multan, and they captured a lot of cities. This was first presence of Arabs in this region, and then it opened the door for others to come. Next big invasion came from Ismailis. It is surprising that the Ismaili government, which was in Egypt, and they were called Fatimi, they sent their troops and they sent their people, and they came to subcontinent, and they started their own government, which was in Multan, city of Multan. Now you can see right from the starting, it was not because of religion to spread and because of invitation of Islam to be given to other people. It started with wars, and unfortunately it started with some sort of clash between sects. It started with this mentality. I can't say that this is the main reason that we are still in this problem, but okay, this is the background where we started. And because I have only 45 minutes to explain and too many points here, so I will skip quickly coming to the current situation. So this was the starting. We had three main groups right from the starting in the subcontinent. Later on, a big turn came in 16th century. 16th century was a crucial time for Muslim history, when there was Ottoman Empire in Iraq and Safavid in Iran and Mughals in India. And the Mughals were somehow lying between Safavid, those who had recently announced Shia, being Shia, and Ottoman, those who were traditionally a Sunni state. So Mughals had a strategy to get aid from Safavid, pledging that they will announce Shiaism and they will favor them, but they used to get army and they used to capture cities in India and forgot what they had pledged. We have different account of this compromise between Mughals and Safavids, but unfortunately it also paved the way for further escalation of tension between different communities. And twice Iranian army came to India with the first person Mughal emperor, that was Babur, and then Humayun, and this group stayed in India. This was I may say first big population of Shias, those were residing in India. But major powers remain in the hand of kings. They used to have alliances with other kings. Babur and Mughals had alliances with Safavid, and whenever this alliance used to break, there was a problem in India between sects. And I think a very good example can be seen at the age of Aurangzeb. Aurangzeb was a king from Mughals, and he had requested Iranian king to send him army for his help, but the Iranian king denied, and as he denied, Aurangzeb realized that I have no support to get, so I have to go towards extremism. And he went towards extremism, and a big massacre of Shias started in India. At the same time, there were other explanations for this traditional sectarianism. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. So I was telling you that at the time of Aurangzeb, there was a conflict between kings, and that resulted in a massacre and sectarianism in Pakistan, in India. That was India at that time. But there were different explanations also. Before Aurangzeb, there was a very big king, very, very prominent king, and he was Muhammad Akbar. And in the court of Muhammad Akbar, there was some sort of leniency between Muslims and Hindus. And in the court of Akbar, there were many prominent Shias, and they were Iranians. Someone say and explain that this has given excuse for extremists to come in. And they said because of the Iranian influence, because of the Shia influence in the court of Akbar, they started what we call now a propagation institutionalized in the form of sectarianism. So the first person who rose against it was Ahmad Sarhindi, and he issued a fatwa that might be the first fatwa in the history of Muslims of subcontinent, and he denounced Shia and started his preaching in a popular institutional style. He wrote a book which was Radd Rawafiz. At that time they used to speak and write in Persian. So the book was Radd Rawafiz, and Rawafiz were called, Shias were called Rawafiz. And then that kept on going with Ahmad Sarhindi establishing this trend, and his time was 1564-1624. And then it started. Ahmad Sarhindi was the first person, then Shah Waliullah, then Shah Abdul Aziz, and later on in different shapes and styles it kept on going. At the time of British government, when British came to India, it was already been done. There were too many sects, there were too many institutions, but further institutionalization of sectarianism happened at that time. So around 1860, we had Barelvis, we had Deobandis, we had Shia, and we had Qadianis. And of course we had Ismailis also. So I'm talking about 1860, and at that time, 150 years back, all the sects had tensions, and all the sects had institutions, already had institutions. I can say somehow British enhanced them. I can say it, and because we don't have time to prove this and go into the lengthy discussions, but you can go through a book, very good book recently written, Sectarian War by Khalid Ahmad. It's a good book. You can go through it and you can find the history there. And regarding the Mughal era and Safavid era, there is another good book, Indian-Iranian Relationship, written by Dr. Riazul Islam. So these two books can give you an insight regarding the history of sectarianism in the Indian subcontinent. At the time of creation of Pakistan, there were different sects. I told you there were Barelvis. Barelvis are a sect of Sunni Muslims which are closer to Shia. They have regards for mystics, for Irfaniyat, and they have regards for preachers. They were called Sufis in Pakistan. But against them, there were Deobandis. Those were close to Ahl Hadith, and they were close to Wahhabism, though Wahhabism was new at that time. But slowly and gradually, it was coming to India through those ulama who were going for Hajj and pilgrimage to Makkah. And when they were going to pilgrimage, they were getting ideas from Wahhabiyat, and it used to come in India. At the time of creation of Pakistan, we had differences, and we had institutionalized it, unfortunately. But a new factor came in, that was the establishment of Saudia in Hejaz. And through this establishment, they penetrated India, and the social fabric, which was up to that time was not that good, was influenced by them very badly. And sectarianism started growing in Pakistan very deeply. In some of the areas, with the sectarianism, in some of the areas, people were living in peaceful manner. Sunnis and Shia were going to get together in Azadari. It was very common in India up to that time. And I can tell you, a province in Pakistan, that is Balochistan, it was very popular for Azadari, that everyone could have come together and they were doing Azadari. But after the appearance of Wahhabism through Saudia and their followers and preachers, it ruined, and now we can see Pakistan, that shape which we have now. But after the creation of Pakistan, one more thing happened. You know, the creation of Pakistan was done on an ideology which was called Two Nations Theory. It was an idea given by a few scholars in Pakistan. They said that we have two nations. First is Indians, that were Hindu, and we, the Muslims. They said, because we had two nations, we had to be divided into two countries. That idea was promoted by Muslim League Party for Muslims and guided by Muhammad Ali Jinnah, and it was opposed by Mahatma Gandhi, and the party was Congress, which opposed them. But later on, Muslims were convinced that Hindus are not going to give us the right, and they switched to Pakistan, and Pakistan was established. I'm not going to tell you that it was that a good step or not, but the theory, which was two-nation theory, that was relied upon. And they started working on this theory to prove that we Muslims and Hindus had differences. During this process of establishing this theory, they allowed a few people to write the history. Pakistan was created, and they needed a new syllabus for their schools and colleges. They allowed the scholars to come in and write the history. But when they were writing history on two-nation theory, unfortunately, they dignified those scholars who were against Shias also, not only against Hindus, but also against Shias. So much emphasis was given to Ahmad Sarhindi. Much emphasis was given to Aurangzeb Alamgir. Because why they did that? Because they wanted to prove that Muslims were separate from Hindus, and that's why they wanted to prove that Ahmad Sarhindi was good. He fought against Hindus. But the same Ahmad Sarhindi had fought against Shias also. I don't know who and with what intention they did that, but this route was established in Pakistan. I started my education in Pakistan, and I remember myself studying all those figures and dignifying them, that they were true Muslims as it was portrayed. But later on, I came to realize that those guys who were portrayed as very dignified, very pious, in fact, they were rewarded for their statements against Shia. All those who were dignified in Indian and Pakistani subcontinent, syllabuses, books, and Islamic history, unfortunately, they were much against Shias too. Now, I have named a few for you, but this concept has got rooted in Pakistanis. They have learned their history through sectarian eyes, and unfortunately, afterwards, we could not control it, we could not correct it. The biggest change, I think, came at the time of Ziaul Haq. And it was in 1979 when this change came. Through Afghanistan, Russians invaded Afghanistan. In Iran, we had Islamic Revolution. And at that time, clash of interest got involved. And Pakistan was the main battlefield for this clash of interest. So from one side, we had Iranian Revolution, and a lot of people trying to stop and you see making barrier in the influence of Iranian culture going to eastward, that was India and Pakistan. And historically it was proved that whatever happens in Persia, it used to come to India. So they were afraid that Iranian Revolution would have an influence on Pakistan and India. They had planning, and the planning mixed up with the invasion of Russians in Afghanistan. So at least four planners got involved in Pakistan and India, especially in Pakistan because it was close to Iranian border. First one was the Pakistani government, which was guided by or led by Ziaul Haq, who himself had very much tendency towards sectarianism and going towards Wahhabiyat. He got help from American CIA, those who were trying to fight a war against Russians in Afghanistan. Saudis also came in, because Saudis were fearing that Iranian influence will come towards Pakistan and they will lose the battle in Pakistan. And at that time, you know, Saudis brought their money, Americans brought their strategies, and Pakistanis, ISI and army, everyone got involved, and unfortunately Pakistan became a battlefield for all those ideas. And who were crushed in between? Unfortunately, the Shias. And generally Pakistanis. You can imagine thousands of madaris were established. Why they established these madaris? With two intentions. First one, they wanted to prepare jihadis for themselves to fight in Afghanistan, and second one, to stop the influence of Iran. So they prepared a lot of jihadis. I can tell you hundreds of thousands of jihadis, tens of thousands of madaris. And just to give an example, Pakistan spent $8 million of zakat fund on madaris. Officially they said, okay, we have spent that much time in a few years. So Shias at that time, what Shias were doing, they were just looking that our country has become a battlefield, all the ideas, though they had a tendency to protect them naturally, and they were inclining towards Iran, but unfortunately they were not prepared for this battlefield. It was a game played by major powers, and a huge amount of money was involved. Shias of Pakistan could not tolerate or could not observe that shock. I remember that time Allama Arif Hussain Husseini was the leader of Shias, and he used to point out that what we are planting these days, we will get it in the later years. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. Russians went out, and Americans lost their interest in Pakistan, but whatever they had planted, it remained in Pakistan. Tens of thousands of madaris, with their ideology going towards jihadism, and unfortunately going against Shia because of the Saudi influence, and Americans left the country, and Pakistan was free for others to play here for 10 years. For 10 years, we lost our central government. During 10 years, 5 governments were changed. And you can imagine what used to happen at that time. Then in 1998, Musharraf came in, President Musharraf, and Musharraf had a bit of a strong central power. And he applied a type of U-turn in Pakistani history. And he said, going from jihadism back towards liberalism, he tried his best. But, okay, we need sincerity to guide a nation. And then when 9/11 happened, everything again came into the hands of Americans. Americans, those who had lost their interest in Pakistan after the Battle of Russia, they came back in, and this time with another agenda and with another view. And you know what happened? They invaded Afghanistan, they invaded Iraq, and all the battlefield was played again in Pakistan. So this was the case for Pakistan in history. And somehow we were involved in the battles because we were on the crossroad of history, and the regions were very important for players to play. Now, in the current situation, I can imagine at least 9 countries are directly or indirectly involved in this region. At least 9 countries are involved. A few I have named, and you can add, for example, Britain, British government, for example, Afghanistan, India already involved, and you can say Israelis and others, but it is a battlefield now. Everyone has weapon, everyone has deep-rooted hatred or his own agenda, and unfortunately there is no power in Pakistan to protect these conspiracies or these strategies which were played by others. 3 points I would like to especially mention here. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad wa Ajil Farajam. Unfortunately, looking at these difficulties, I told you Pakistani Shias of Pakistan were not prepared for all these happenings. When all these things were happening, there were 2 tendencies which were planted in Shias, or they perceived that way. First one was to go inward, and most of the Shias applied this tendency. They went inward and they wanted to become more Shia, and they wanted to have lesser links with Sunni community. And this, I think, flumed the already charged environment, and the sectarianism got more roots in between us. Second tendency was to go towards liberalism. Leave the religion and go towards liberalism. And third tendency, which was created here, is to go towards militancy. So there were three main tendencies which were created, or we perceived that way. First one is to go inward and become more and more isolated. Second one is to go towards liberalism and secularism. And third is to go towards militancy. All of them had owned their own problems. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. So the Shias in Pakistan have a few fundamental problems. Number one, through the period of time, they could not establish their own institutions. I think this is one of the big problems. I was trying to skip all the historical backgrounds which you can learn from the books. I wanted to come to the analysis of why Pakistani Shias are facing problems. One of the major reasons that we are having this sort of problem, because we could not establish our institutions. And it is unlike Iran and Iraq and even Bahrain and even Saudi, they could establish some sort of institutions for themselves, especially Madaris. Or, for example, Lebanon, they could establish themselves. But unfortunately, in Pakistan, it could never happen. So, just to give an example, we have two main sects in Sunnis. First one is Deobandi, and the second one is Barelvi. Barelvi are more closer to us, and Deobandis are the guys which were supported by Saudi. Now, how many students they have in their madaris? It is roughly 2 million. And how many students we have in our madaris? That are roughly 11,000. There is no match. They could establish a lot of institutions for themselves, and unfortunately, we could not do that. Though we have started now a few good madaris, a few good university type of madaris being established, but we are far behind them. This is one of them. Second, because of lack of this academic background, still we don't have single personality which was agreed upon between all the Shias. This is the second problem. We don't have a clear-cut leadership in between Shias of Pakistan. And though we have leaders, alhamdulillah, but unfortunately, one person which was agreed upon by everyone, we don't have him. And this lack of leadership is another problem in Shias. Third one is ideological training, lack of ideological training. We are Shia, and we are doing our marasim, we are doing azadari, we are doing everything. But unfortunately, still the training which had to be given to Shias, we are lacking it. And in the absence of this training, every player can play with us. You can imagine an SMS will come and it will be circulated, and people, without thinking on the meaning, context, intentions, they will be influenced by such moves. So I think the third problem is ideological training. It should be given, and it should be provided to them. Fourth one is a roadmap, a clear roadmap. If we could not have a true planning, we will be deceived by those who are trying to deceive us. So I think going inward, one of the deception. Going towards militancy is another deception. And being liberal and secular is another deception. We have to see what our religion has taught us and how we should lead our life according to our religion. But unfortunately, without a particular roadmap and without a strategic planning, these are going somewhere else, which we need to address. So here we are. I had 45 minutes to say, but I unfortunately lost a few minutes in the early, and then this mishappening, and I want to wind up here. So if you could have question and answer, and we can clear those points in question and answer. There were surely there were many problems which we can mention. Let me clear this point too, and then we will go to question and answer session. In Shia itself, they have many, many tendencies. For example, one tendency is going towards the concept which is called Ghali, being Ghali, that means raising the status of Imamah to a level which is going closer to, coming closer to Uluhiyat, or the chain of God, or the line of God. So this is one of the tendencies. It might be created somewhere, and it has been planted, but okay, this is one of the tendencies, and I fear that in some of the parts it is growing. And the other tendency which I told you, this is traditional Shia, which has nothing to do with anything in society, which has nothing to do with what they call it politics, and be traditional, just observing their traditions. So there are a lot of tendencies in Shia, and they are also making problem for them. But beside all these things, beside all this background which I told you, and beside the problems which Shia face, one thing I can tell you very clearly, being in Pakistan for the last 16 years, working with them, and that is their pure heart. They are simple, they are less educated, they are less organized, but alhamdulillah, they are pure in their heart. They want to do whatever given to them in the name of Islam. They were befooled, unfortunately. Don't think that Taliban is single title. Don't think Taliban is one group in between them. There are tens of groups in Taliban. Some were fighting for this group, some were fighting for that group. But unfortunately, if you go to the general public, most of them are simple-hearted, loving people, and working for Islam. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. So, and because of that simplicity, they were befooled. Because of that love for Islam, they were befooled, and they were thrown to whatever front other wanted them to throw in. So you go to Chechnya and you'll find Pakistanis, you go to Bosnia and you'll find Pakistanis, and you go to everywhere in the name of jihad, you will find Pakistanis.